Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is proud to be sponsored by Trupanion, medical insurance for pets. Trupanion understands that veterinary costs can be expensive and hard to budget for, especially when your pet gets unexpectedly sick or injured. And that's why Trupanion is there to help you, and help you when you need it the most, by covering eligible expenses during unexpected veterinary visits. Luckily, Trupanion's able to pay your vet directly, so you'll pay less out of pocket and you won't have to wait for reimbursement. Trupanion also has a free program for breeders that allows you to have peace of mind by sending your litters with a special offer so that folks can try out the insurance. You can learn more about the breeder support program by following the link on my partner page. Be sure to mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a very, very special guest. You guys, this is super exciting. I teased this on the Facebook page not too long ago, but joining us today is Elena Manis, and she is the author of Soul Dog, A Journey into the Spiritual Life of Animals. And I have to tell you guys, I wept real tears. We have all had a soul dog, a heart dog. I have, you have, everyone has. And Elena has written about her soul dog and her journey to learn about the ability to communicate with her companion that she didn't have. And I think it speaks to all of us. And Elena comes to us from the depths of the entertainment industry. She is an award-winning independent documentary director, writer, producer. She has lots of credits to her name. I have tremendous respect for what she's done because she comes from an industry I used to inhabit. So, Elena, welcome. I am so happy that you've joined us today.
Oh, thank you. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Excellent.
I'm really excited to be doing this.
Well, I was really honored, as I mentioned, that you reached out to me and reached out to Pure Dog Talk to share some of this information, because I'll be perfectly honest, I had not seen nor heard of this book, and it is a book that needs to be in our community. And so I am really thrilled that you're here to talk about it. So all of our guests and even the famous get to do the 411. Okay. So the 411 in our world is a little bit about your background, what brought you to the point that you decided that you needed a standard poodle puppy in your life. And we'll kind of take it from there.
Okay. Well, as you said, my main career has been as a television documentary producer, director, writer. And when I was sort of at the height of my career, I was working for the networks and very type A personality and very driven and obsessed with my career. And I got into a triple rollover car accident on a film shoot out west and was very lucky to come out of it. And it was really a wake up call. And I thought, you know, there's got to be more to life than working like a demon and getting into car crashes.
Yeah, car crashes are definitely bad.
To make a long story short, I had always loved animals. I will say I more or less thought of them as pets, you know, under our control. I'd grown up with cats, but I'd always wanted a dog. And I thought, well, I'll get a puppy. And my parents had friends who had standard poodles, so I knew the breed. Mm-hmm. And that felt familiar to me. And being a first-time dog owner, I think it was comfortable for me to have a breed that I was familiar with. And I didn't know what I didn't know at that point, but I knew enough to think that, you know, it'd be good to have a breed I kind of knew, not that I really understood what a standard poodle was thoroughly. But so I went ahead and got a puppy. All my friends and colleagues said, "You're crazy. You're traveling too much. What are you going to do?" You know, I think they didn't really think I was the kind of person to nurture a puppy. Nevertheless, I brought the puppy home and named him Brio, which in music, my family had a lot of musicians in it. So it means gusto and energy. So I brought Brio home, and he did indeed have a lot of gusto and energy.
He was aptly named.
Yes. So in the beginning, it wasn't really going according to plan. I'd really thought that I'd get trainers and support, and it wouldn't really change my life much at all to have a puppy.
And I think there's many of us in my audience who can sort of chuckle adoringly at that thought.
Well, there's a story I tell in the book that sort of captures what it was like in the beginning. I had him in Central Park, and I'd had a trainer, so I started to have him off-leash. But he would take off and really didn't come back when I called until he decided it was time. So I was walking backwards, screaming at him to come. And I managed to, I realized there was no land beneath my feet. So I had stepped over the edge of a boat pond.
Oh my gosh.
In New York City's Central Park.
That image was pretty good.
And somebody I knew who was at the other end of the pond came over and said, "Oh my goodness, that was you. I thought it was a homeless person taking a bath." So anyway, Brio eventually came back and just stood there staring at me like, "You called me?" So this sort of thing, there were several incidents like this. The trainers were helping, but I really felt kind of desperate, frankly. You know, I thought I didn't really understand this puppy. I didn't know how to communicate with him. I didn't talk dog. So I'd heard that there were people who called themselves animal communicators who claimed to be able to talk telepathically to a dog or other animal. So I, you know, my reporter instincts clicked in. I did a little research and found a woman on the West Coast who talked to me by phone, and I didn't really tell her much about Brio, but she ended up giving an amazingly accurate reading, as they call it, what he was like, and describing my apartment and our environment, the streets where we walked, etc. So I got very, very intrigued with what was going on here. I was a big skeptic. I didn't really believe it. I was a television journalist, and I didn't like woo-woo things.
Fruby art majors. That's what I always say. Fruby art major.
Right. But, you know, I was reading so accurate, and then others I got from other communicators were also so accurate that I began to feel there's got to be something going on here that I can't explain by rational means. So, in short, they helped me to really try to understand Brio in a different way, and I came to realize that he was a feeling, sentient, very intelligent being, as standard poodles as a breed are. They're super smart.
Right.
He really was my heart dog, my soul dog. As time went on, it became a very profound relationship.
As I was reading through the book and the process that you went through, and I know there are many of us in the sport. I've actually interviewed an animal communicator on the show. I have had personal instances of dogs that I just needed to know, right? Like I needed to know what was going on in their mind. And I, like you, a journalist, very skeptical. and yet, right? And the things that you learn and the things that they tell you and you think, oh my God. I think the book was a particularly fascinating journey, but talk to us a little bit about some of the things that you encountered as you were looking for your puppy. You selected a standard poodle because this was something that you were familiar with. I don't mean to insert politics here, but was this something that, you know, did you feel that you were in trouble with your peers because you had selected a purebred dog, or was that something that was comfortable for you?
It was comfortable for me. I mean, it was some years ago.
True. Right.
I mean, I don't think I frankly talked to a lot of people about it. I sort of made up my mind and that's what I was going to do. I mean, I talked to people about getting a puppy per se, but I mean, I suppose there were people who suggested a rescue dog, and you know, I really respect and admire people who do that. But in my situation at the time, I mean, I really didn't know anything about dogs. I'd known standard poodles.
Right.
You know, I had an idea of what they were like, you know, very smart and almost human-like, really.
Yes.
I mean, over the years, I've talked to people who have had other dogs and then got a standard poodle and said, oh, they're really different in some
they
ways.
They are different.
I mean, I think every dog is different to the person who loves it, you know.
Yes.
But all those factors, you know, I guess came into my decision.
Well, and in your instance, what you're describing, we talk about the best fit for your family being a purebred dog because you know what to expect. And particularly in this situation, you're in an apartment, you're in Manhattan, you know, something that is adorable that might turn into a St. Bernard sized dog was probably not going to work out so hot.
Well, right. I mean, I really was such a newbie. I mean, I was scared, frankly, mm-hmm. I was scared to death, even though I went ahead and did this. And I thought, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? But at least, you know, I had some idea that there were certain traits that I could sort of count on. Or
exactly.
Thought I could.
It was going to be a certain size. It was going to be a certain type of mind and that sort of thing.
Right.
Absolutely. One of the images from the book that really stood out to me was when you were talking about having Brio and taking him out for a walk after 9/11 and his sense of that and how he was trying to tell you something.
Absolutely. I mean, he was really special in so many ways, but I mean, it was obviously a horrifying day. And I live in Manhattan, not downtown near the towers, but the smell and the air was, I mean, it came uptown and it was horrifying. That's all I can say. And I had to walk him. So I took him to the door of the building and he locked his legs and would not go out.
Mm.
You know, he just wouldn't go. I had to take him back and try again later. So, I mean, he knew. I mean, he could smell it.
Right. And the communication that he was giving you was almost a protective one.
Absolutely. I mean, there are instances over the years and even more miraculous, but he absolutely, I think in that instance, had a sixth sense and was trying to say, no, no, we don't want to do this.
Right. Right. This is a bad idea, Mom. Trust me on this.
Right.
Right. Absolutely. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. So, hey, crew. New year, new decade. Let's have some new Pure Dog Talk promos while we're at it, shall we? All right. Our patrons group continues to grow and thrive. It's like the NPR of dogdom. It's so cool. And Pure Dog Talk offers you, my loyal listeners, an opportunity to get in on the fun. Pure Dog Talk patrons are invited to join a closed Facebook chat group just for you. And I promise you, no drama mamas, no keyboard warriors, just fabulous, supportive, Pure Dog Talk fans. That's it. Each month, I pick a photo submitted by our patrons group to be the cover image on the Facebook page. You guys have seen it. And anybody with a quick question gets immediate feedback from moi, personally, as well as input from the array of patron group members. Pretty fun. The patrons group also gets first dibs on podcast topic suggestions. So if you have something you want to hear about, that's a good way to do it. And to celebrate the new year, I'm adding a whole new technological challenge to my life. Oh my God. I will be hosting Facebook Live discussions for patrons only on the final Monday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific time zone.
Yeah, baby, yeah!
Y'all join us from wherever you are, but that's when they'll be. Just a few of our planned topics of conversation include advertising on a shoestring budget. Yeah, trust me, we can talk about that. Campaigning a special just for owner handlers. Problem solving the stack. Tricks of the trade for grooming, like what products do I like or anybody else like. Open mic Q&As, all that kind of stuff. What you guys need to know is that the generosity of Pure Dog Talk's patrons is literally what keeps the MP3s running here. The money is set aside exclusively for overhead and operational expenses. That's it. Now, I'm incredibly grateful to our corporate sponsors. You have no idea. They have the dedication to purebred dogs and the resources to ensure that Pure Dog Talk remains a powerful voice for purebred dogs. That you guys, y'all believed in this mission and you've supported it from the beginning. You are the heart and soul of my crusade to provide all purebred dog lovers a constantly growing, challenging treasure trove of knowledge. in a 21st century format.
Like a room lunch.
So just click the Be My Patron on Podbean button on the website. It's quick, it's easy, it's secure. And I hope to see all of you on the next Facebook Live chat. Okay, so I think the journey that you went through and the process that you went through to move from a place of skepticism about animals and how you viewed them in a sort of one-dimensional way to the deeper understanding that came with not just animal communication, but really reading your dog, I think is so important for people that are either new to dogs or new to developing that relationship. And I wonder if you could just kind of walk us through a little bit of that, because I found it very powerful.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And for me, it became all about connection. I mean, I knew I didn't have a connection that I wanted with my dog. And I did try to create that. I mean, it was maybe an unusual way, but I mean, I came to really see him and, as I said, really all animals, our fellow creatures, in a very different way. I mean, as I said, I started out thinking of them as pets that we could control, that were really basically under our dominion. And I mean, in a sense, of course, they are in some ways, but I think I came to see him really not as my inferior in any way, but really in many ways as a superior being. As my teacher, he changed me in so many ways, the relationship with him as the years went by and the connection became so deep and life-changing for me. There's stories I tell in the book, just little examples, like he oddly just loved flowers. He would pull me into flower shops in the city.
Yes, that and rescuing the kitten. Those were the two.
Right. I mean, he didn't want a treat or attention, which most dogs, or many dogs, would pull you into a store and they want to have attention and treats, etc. But he would just sit there in the middle of the store smelling. And, you know, he would sit there as long as I would let him. I mean, he just wanted to smell the flowers. I mean, he was literally teaching me how to stop and smell the roses.
Right.
Which was a really important lesson for me.
Yes.
And there were so many things like that. His essence, I mean, he really had a wisdom and a kind of dignity about him. Not that he wasn't playful and fun, you know, like any dog, but he just accepted the world and knew his role in the world, his place in it. I mean, nothing fazed him. I mean, the first trainer who took him out as a puppy, we went out of the building, you know, in the beginning, they can't be exposed before they have their shots. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he trots down the sidewalk and the trainer says, oh, you don't have anything to worry about. He's fine.
Right. Right.
Totally confident.
Well, and I think that that is, you know, for our listeners, one of the things that we as breeders work so hard to create is that amazing animal that can go into any environment. And it is genetics, and it is early development, and it is all of those things that create a companion that's able to do that sort of thing.
Right. I mean, he was just doing his own thing a lot of the time. I mean, he did become better behaved over the years in terms of classic, you know, ordinary stuff.
Sure.
But he always had a mind of his own. I mean, he would just do his own thing. And as I said, you know, teaching me along the way.
Right. Right. That level of confidence. The other thing that I wonder if you could speak to, because I've just had actual personal experience with it, which was kind of bizarro. You talk in the book about he had a physical illness. He had degenerative myelopathy. We talk about this because it happens. But I thought your discussion about using, my understanding, basically Reiki, right? The energy healing. I wonder if you could talk about that, because that was fascinating to me.
Yeah, so that was a big turning point, you know, in my belief that things that I couldn't explain rationally.
Right.
All of a sudden one day, I mean, it was really all of a sudden, he collapsed on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And I took him to my vet, of course, and, you know, there were so many tests, you know, neurologists and cardiologists and finally a neurologist who did MRIs. And he said, well, there's something wrong with his spine and he's never going to probably walk normally again, you know. And I was devastated. So I found out some business colleague actually of mine said, oh, you should call this animal communicator who does long-distance energy healing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was shocked, first of all, that this business person used animal communicators, but I did it because, you know, I was desperate and I had mm-hmm. nothing to lose. And so she was, you know, the other side of the country again, and we talked right. only on the phone. I didn't tell her much. And there was some long silences, and she said she worked on him, so to speak, mm-hmm. in some way that, you know, I can't really understand thoroughly.
Right.
And she said, there's nothing wrong with his spine. He's going to be fine. I'm going to work on him some more today and over the next few weeks, but you're going to have your dog back. And she was right.
Right.
He had several more years. He ran. He walked normally. He ran normally. He was only 8 then, and he lived to be 15.
Wow. That's impressive, because in our world, my listeners, we all have, if we've not actually personally encountered DM, we've heard the stories of it. And that, to me, is really incredible. And I would say something, listeners, perhaps we need to think more about some of these things that to us, we might be skeptical, because clearly.
I'm not trying to proselytize or insist that people
right?
believe.
No, I'm dead serious.
all this, but, and I would never tell anybody not to go to use Western medicine. But mm-hmm. as you say, you can keep an open mind and try things that, you know, what seems to work. I mean, thank God I did.
Right. And I think the point is, here's someone who is from a system, right? A mindset, a perspective that is always professionally trained to be the ultimate skeptic. I mean, that's what journalists are. And to be able to encounter something that you just can't explain, but that works, is kind of life-changing.
Well, it really is. It was a process. You know, I didn't become a believer overnight.
Right.
You know, the incident with Brio's health was mm-hmm. one big turning point. And frankly, even after he passed, when he passed, the fact that some very accurate and amazing communications continued after that.
Right.
Also certainly added and cemented my belief that it's not that I can explain it, really, although I do have a lot of interesting new science in the book.
Yes, I saw the quantum physics and all that. That was like way over my head. Shoo!
But there's a lot of new science on dog and animal cognition yes. and emotions also that is part of the story.
Yes. I think that so much of what's in there tracks with what we have heard other guests on the show talk about, right? So the human-animal bond and how that impacts us as people and the importance that they bring to our lives. And you talk about the ability to go out into public and talk to people and meet people in a different way. And all of the things that just simply having a companion animal does for us.
Yes, I think I just really want to say again that keep an open mind about who animals are and what they do mean in our lives and what they can teach us. I mean, I think we're starting to come some steps down the road in terms of seeing animals, our fellow creatures, in a new way. But certainly we have a long way to go when you look at all the abuse and cruelty out there.
Right. And that is always horrifying to all of us. But I think that the ability to understand the creatures, the people inside our animals, I think each animal has a person inside. Personally, that's like my opinion.
Absolutely.
I love the ability. I talk about it sometimes when I'm teaching people how to show their dogs, right? You talked about the meditation and how you were able to kind of bring some of that to the communication with Brio. But I think about it when I talk to people about how to show their dogs, because I suggest that they go inside their head and you make that connection. You make the eye contact with the dog and you just blow everything out other than that eye contact. And it is amazing the connection that you can get with that.
No, I believe it. I mean, I don't claim to be an animal communicator in the way that professionals are, but you know, I think I hope that I've gotten a little better with my current dog, who also is a standard poodle, incidentally.
Yes.
But, I mean, I do think, and the communicators say that everybody, we all have this ability to communicate telepathically. You know, most of them say they do it through the visual communication,
mm-hmm.
although that varies a little, but I think there's something to that.
Mm-hmm.
I know with my current dog, I mean, he hates to go to the groomer, Bria. Nothing ever bothered Brio.
Right.
This one does not like to go. And I mean, somehow he seems to know before I leave home that we're going to the groomer. I don't know how he knows, but it must be in my mind.
Well, it is amazing. And again, this is something I teach people all the time. Dogs don't necessarily, you talk about, you know, the communication piece. This is a piece of it. Dogs don't hear words per se. You know, they don't necessarily hear sit, stay, come, what have you. They hear our tone of voice and they hear our body language. And that's the communication that takes place on a surface level. I mean, you're talking about much deeper mental communication, but on a very, very individual surface level, the ability that the dogs have to read our faces.
Yes, there's new science on that, really.
Yes.
And they're wired to read our faces.
Yes. Our energy, how our body posture is, all of those things. I mean, you got to think about how many thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of years that dogs have been living with people and have been bred selectively to do specific jobs and give us a specific and accurate reaction to what we're asking them. How did they do that? They didn't do it by learning the word sit.
Right.
And so I think that piece of it, in addition to what you're going into more depth on, is really important for all of us to understand.
Well, right, that point. I mean, their cognitive and emotional abilities
yes.
are so beyond what we imagined or thought they were in the past, and the science is proving it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Proving it all the time. I keep seeing there was just another new study not too long ago talking about different breeds. Brains are actually hardwired differently. I'm like, okay, we knew that. You know, those of us that breed dogs, like, we knew that. We knew that an Australian Shepherd and a German wire-haired pointer had different brains, and a standard poodle has a different brain because they were hardwired to do specific jobs.
Right.
And that they now have science on. And I just think the more we know, the more we understand what we don't know.
There's a funny joke that I heard and sometimes tell is that the reason why so many Goldens are service dogs is mm-hmm. comparing what a standard poodle and a Golden would do as a service dog.
Right.
So if the person walks towards a manhole, the Golden would say, oh, be careful, come this way. And the poodle would say, oh, that could be interesting.
Yes.
So it's a more creative intelligence.
Yes. It's just a different, absolutely, but it's the brain is hardwired differently. It's the same thing. Wire-haired pointers are definitely not guide dogs, trust me. This is the breed that I live with and raise. And there's a reason they don't use them as guide dogs, because that exact sort of, hey, look, there's a cat.
Well, I think it's a sign. I mean, I don't think poodles are quite as cold-hearted as that. But it's a sign.
Interesting. They think it's interesting and they want you to come with them to see the interesting thing.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, Alana, I really, really, really have enjoyed visiting with you. And listeners, we're going to have a link on the website to the Soul Dog book and opportunities for you to acquire it for your own library. And I will tell you, it is well worth the acquisition. It is a wonderful, wonderful, heart-touching investigation, and I think it will give all of us something to think about. So I think of my few interactions, and the one that I'm going to leave everybody with, Elena, you'll appreciate this. I showed a Spinoni Italiano, and she was very, very naughty. And she was very successful, but she was very naughty, and she would frequently get herself defeated because, you know, she was being naughty. And so we were going to Westminster Kennel Club. And her mother was very, 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 very hopeful that she would not be naughty there. And so her owner contacted an animal communicator, and the animal communicator told the owner that Adele wanted to be pretty. She wanted to be told that she was pretty. And so the owner communicated this to me, and I said, okay. And so I told the owner that pretty is pretty does. And honest to God, this still gives me chills. We went to Westminster. She won the breed. She made a cut in the group at Westminster. And she never once acted up. Not once. She was perfect. And I spent the entire time at the end of the leash telling her that pretty is pretty does.
Oh, that's a wonderful story.
It's an absolute true story. Absolute true story. And so everybody, just think about it sometimes. There's a little more to it out there, I think, than we always, more than we know, more than we think we know.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, I've so much enjoyed speaking with you.
Absolutely. Tremendously enjoyed it. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.